10 count. What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the 10 count. As always, your boys from Talkamania are here, J-Bomb and Dez, and we are joined by our monthly guest in the studio today, Justin Roberts. Justin, say what's up.
Hey, what's up, guys? Always a pleasure to be here for the 10 count.
And I guess I'll let Dez say hi. So, Dez, what up, bro?
How's it going, guys? Glad to be here. Another episode of 10 Count.
So, before we get into this, we got a couple things to plug. So, as always, follow us on Twitter, @_Talkamania, and go check out our shit on prowrestlingtees.com/Talkamania, and be sure to follow Justin @JustinSRoberge.
I wanted to change my Twitter handle, but I can't, so I'm just sticking with it.
What do you mean you can't? You can.
My a buddy of mine thought that it would be a great idea if I changed my Twitter handle to Indie Wrestling Expert.
So do it.
As an attempt to garner hate.
I think you would. I mean, you'd have to really back that up.
I know. That's tough, man.
I'm here still trying to fight for the Desmino handle with one Z. I'm fighting over this guy. I don't know where he's from, right? Everywhere I have my username, Desmino1Z. Twitter, I joined a little bit too late. I'm stuck with the two Zs, and I've been trying to get this guy to give it to me, and he's holding it hostage. It's my ongoing battle for Zed.
Have you considered that he may be a stalker?
No. His name's like Desmond, and that's kind of where mine comes from as well, too, my middle name. And he's just like, no, I'm the real Desmino. I'm the real Desmino. And I literally have this name on like 90% of everything. And it's this one that I just cannot get hold of.
And you can just be like, how many followers you got, bro?
Oh, he doesn't have any. And he tweets like once a year, which is the most frustrating part. I'm like, oh, nice. It's about a year and a half. Maybe I can see if Twitter can, you know. I've even tried to like guess his password and log in just to see if I could like switch it and stuff. But
guess
obviously,
his,
you know.
Password.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I know. I want that account and I want that Zed.
Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks.
How are you gonna guess his password?
I looked at him, I tried to read his character. I'm like, okay, he likes rap. You know, maybe it's something to do with his name. I didn't sit there and spend like a good day on it. I spent like maybe a half an hour, like, maybe, you know. Like, I don't know, I wasn't gonna go the extra step and try hacking into it because that's a no-no, so.
Whoa. Let's not get us in trouble here.
Exactly.
He's into rap.
That's why I didn't take that course of action. Anyways, you know, it's a small thing, but it bothers me a little bit. And one day I will get that.
All right.
Hoping he changes it maybe one day too, you know.
So we got to get into this. We got to get into this, boys. Screw the rules. We threw them out the door last time. We have 10 topics that were sent in from our listeners. We're going to discuss them. We'll go around roundtable style. If it goes over 2 minutes, it goes over 2 minutes. But let's get the ball rolling with question number one. The wrestling community is incredibly divided when it comes to crowd reaction. Should wrestling crowds react negatively to matches that they don't want to see, or should they quietly protest by giving no reaction? And this comes in from our boys at Smark to Death. So who wants to tackle this one first?
I'm game. So first of all, thank you, Smark to Death, for the question. I thought that shit was great. So it actually took me a minute to grasp the actual point behind the question. But I think I get it. So I think the question is really, what's a worse reaction to a match that isn't hitting its mark? Is it boos and is it heckles or is it complete silence? And I think the answer is probably somewhere in between. Because like right now, it's pretty safe to say, and we're going to use them as an example because obviously, Roman matches garner a lot of boos. That doesn't really seem to slow things down when it comes to how he's being booked. Other than the obvious elephant in the room, which is that he still hasn't scored a W over Brock, which is why the title's in flux. But I think that if his matches were being met with dead silence, I think that would be more of a clue to Vincent Kennedy McMahon that this Roman thing just isn't working, and that maybe he's pushed it too hard on the people, and now they're starting to rebel. The problem with this, and this is kind of why it almost doesn't matter, is that WWE's a business, and as long as adults and their kids keep throwing down their disposable income on merchandise to the scale that they have been, live crowd reactions basically don't amount, and in the words of motivational speaker Matt Foley from Saturday Night Live, they don't amount to jack squat. That's my take.
Solid. Dez?
So here I am thinking about the question, and Justin hits on every point. I mean, I couldn't agree with him more than he just put it out there. You know, there's also things to think about, you know. The crowd can make the argument that they paid their tickets. You know, they're able to voice their opinions. They're able to scream. They're able to say whatever they want. You know, but as he was mentioning, Roman's matches get hit with tons of boos. And not just boos. We hear obscenities. We hear chants from other promotions or superstars that were controversial in the past, like CM Punk. They started doing CM Punk chants as well, too. I mean, they're never going to die on that one either. And I feel to the point that just becomes a chant that they just like to say these things when they're having these matches. But at the same time, you know, there has to be that middle ground. I like when the fans pay a little bit more respect. You know, people say, hey, they can throw beach balls out there. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the beach ball. They should be able to do what they want to do. But at the same time, you know, they should be paying respect to the stars. They're putting on a show. So, you know, I look at it both ways in that sense. But, you know, maybe it's just gotten to the point where the fans are just so frustrated with the product right now that that's why it's turning up the aggression. Wrestling is also getting exciting and more excitement, and the crowd's evolving as well, too. But I think going back to Justin's point about, you know, should they be saying, booing them out of the building and saying, like, really recruit things or root things to the talent or just go dead silent, I think McMahon would read more into the dead silence. He's a bit more of an old school guy. You know, I think back in the day, if a match had no reaction, and I know that for a fact, you know, he would take that personal. So I think that would get their opinion over a little bit more than, you know, I guess some of the means that they're doing now. But at the same time, come on, man. I can understand the fans' frustration and the fact why they boo so much during the Roman Reigns matches. It's because, well, come on, change it up. The WWE's been not listening to the WWE universe. They tend to make it think like they do listen. And for me, I think maybe it's a boiling point with the fans, but there needs to be that respectful medium.
It only happens with Roman Reigns matches, really. I mean, maybe we'll
not
get
necessarily.
But... Well, mostly. And I think that's where the like, that discussion is a hot topic. That's in the timelines on Twitter. Everyone's talking about it, especially after the Mahal match. And I saw a podcast going after podcasts and people having conflicting opinions and, oh, don't boo, or I bring my kids there, blah, blah, blah. Look, if you're paying a ticket, you can do whatever you want. I mean, draw the line at literally yelling at a kid wearing a Roman shirt. I mean, I don't think that's what we're getting at here anyways, but...
Yeah, but should you be yelling at, like, female talent, let's just say calling her slut or...
Well, no,
you know,
that's a little different. Well, sometimes I don't think you get personal.
Sometimes they'll say things that are a bit rude or like, you know, like shut the fuck up or
it's okay.
You know, asshole or, you know, even like, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, I get it. But I don't know. I like to see a little bit more respect from the crowd.
Ah.
Okay. So then you should probably not watch takeover shows anymore. Cause like,
I love takeover shows though, but I find they're respectful though. I find it's kind of more like, you know, everybody's on the same page in there, and I find, I don't know, I don't find they cross that line, the NXT fans at least.
Okay, but do you remember how the show closed? With Ciampa doing the wave, and literally for like the last 30 seconds before they go to black, the entire Chicago crowd is chanting, fuck you, Ciampa. Like,
what?
And I'm like,
Chicago,
oh, they're gonna go to black real quick.
That's Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, but that's awesome.
That's everywhere.
Hmm.
Takeover crowds, not as many kids, more adult fans,
yeah,
and more importantly,
yeah,
more non-casual wrestling fans, people who love it, people who probably have podcasts, you know, like people who really give a shit. So they're vocal.
It's interesting that he drew that heat, though, you know? Like, he really did his job, I guess, well, to make them screen that, which I guess is credit to him. And I don't know, you know, like, I guess, you know, it's kind of hard. I have mixed opinions about it. Like, I don't like when the fans are going to be disrespectful. The beach ball thing's a bit silly to me. Watch the match. But I guess you're right. You can make the argument. They paid the tickets. They went in there. They can do what they want. And I guess, you know, the WWE, they can, you know, take those beach balls away if they want. So, but, yeah, I know. It's hard. It's a real kind of, I know. Because what a great way to win, to end the NXT show as well, too, you know? So...
If they wanted to make a change and change the reaction of the fans, they could. They absolutely could. And they're just not. So, fuck them. And people who have a problem with the fans screaming because their kids are there, you're not obligated to be there. Don't bring your kids there. End of story. That's something that really bothers me. I saw a lot of people, this is kind of off topic, but I see a lot of fans' opinions on things. You know, they're not happy with bullying storylines or body shaming storylines.
They're all bullying storylines. That's all that all wrestling is.
Well, but here's the thing: it's just, don't watch them, and just don't watch them. You're not obligated to watch it. It's there. You don't have to watch it. And
but then people will make the same argument about people who are bitching and complaining. They're going to say you're bitching, you're complaining about the product each and every week. It's what we do.
No,
what we
I
do.
Agree.
We're on
don't
here.
Watch it.
Then don't watch it.
I'm agreeing with that. That's my stance on it. That's my stance on it.
Serious.
All right. So before this gets any more heated, let's move on. Let's get on here. Let's keep the ball rolling. This one's going to be New Japan stuff here. So some people are upset that we are getting Ibushi versus Omega in the G1 instead of on a bigger stage like Wrestle Kingdom, for example. They've avoided a singles match for years. Do you think their G1 match will take away from the eventual bigger singles meetup, or will it just add layers to it? And that one's flying in from Kelsey from Super Kicking It with Kelsey. I'm going to give this one to J-Ro, absolutely, to start.
I was like, Des, you want to take this one first, buddy? So thank you, Kelsey, for the question. I love it. So we got to keep in mind here. Some people are worried about, they should have waited till Wrestle Kingdom. Okay, sure. If we're going to attribute Wrestle Kingdom to being New Japan's WrestleMania, that's all well and good. That's where they do the shows at the Tokyo Dome. They draw the biggest crowd. But the G1, that month-long tournament, is actually a big stage in and of itself. And the fact that this match is being scheduled for day 18, which is the last day of the B block, is actually a testament to this match's merit and its importance. And as a matter of fact, it will likely play a crucial role in not only the outcome of the G1 in terms of who advances to the final on day 19, but in the actual booking plans going forward. Bear in mind here, New Japan does not flood their shows with singles matches like North American promotions. A lot of Japanese promotions do that too. You don't see a whole lot of singles matches. And the reason for that is they actually hold singles matches to a high regard in the sense that of their importance. So it's either a big grudge or it's for a championship. But the G1 climax is basically a month of just singles matches between 20 guys divided up into two blocks. You face everybody in your block, so you actually wrestle the full 18 times, because even on the days when you're not scheduled for a singles match, you're usually having a tag match that involves your opponent on your next singles match. So every match is important. And booking plans for months come out of that G1 climax. Example: anybody, whether it be Ibushi or otherwise, who beats Kenny Omega in the G1 climax will likely get a championship title opportunity at some point after the G1 climax. Likewise, whomever wins the climax and therefore gets the title shot at Wrestle Kingdom will then have to defend that title shot against anybody that they were defeated by during the G1. Like, there's months of booking that come out of this. Every match is important. So it's absolutely huge that this match between two best friends and two partners is on the second to last day of the tournament. I'm willing to bet that they're going to be nearly neck and neck in points, and that match is going to be so fucking huge.
Okay, I was gonna be like, all right, but what about Ibushi and Omega? Because that was a pretty big explanation, but okay, cool.
I had to give you some background before
gotcha.
I...
Gotcha. So, I'm not super familiar with New Japan. I mean, I know who Kenny Omega is. I had to Google who Ibushi was because I just forget all these guys' names. But as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, the Golden Lovers guy. So, yeah. That's freaking dope. Tell you the truth, I feel like all of their pay-per-views are pretty freaking huge. So, I don't know enough about it to know the difference between G1 and Wrestle Kingdom and Dominion and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just happy we're going to see the match. I think it's going to be a good one. So that's as far as it goes for me.
Yeah, and I mean, it's outside of my wheelhouse as well, too. But obviously, I've been watching a bit more now. I'm familiar with Kenny Omega at this point. But, you know, I didn't really understand the history. So, and why people might get upset. But again, my inkling or my initial thought was it would be to help elevate the G1. And right now, when Justin breaks it down the way he does, well, that looks like exactly what they're doing. And the way he broke it down and explained it, if that's exactly what they're thinking is, and they are close on points at the end when they face each other, that's huge, isn't it? So,
it,
I don't know.
It will be. Now, it could be that they may not be at the top of the points come that time, but usually it kind of works out that way. That's why when they announced the matches recently, because they just announced that at the earlier part of the week, first they tell you who's involved. Then the next day they tell you who's in block A, who's in block B. They wait a couple of days and then they go, here's all the match cards for the next 3 weeks. So you know what every main event of every show is going to be. And it always gets a reaction. And as a matter of fact, when they showed the video for day 18 and the last match was Omega and Ibushi, the place went ballistic. So it tells you just how important that is.
And do you think, like, with their matchup that they might have at G1, you know, the reception it gets and, you know, seeing how the story goes, do you think that could actually make an even bigger match at Wrestle Kingdom between the two?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Perfectly good example, actually, since Omega is now champion. The third match that he had with Okada, the first one that he won, was in the G1. So he couldn't beat Omega for the title at Wrestle Kingdom. Then they had the draw at Dominion, 60-minute time limit. So now Omega still hasn't picked up a win, but he was as close as he was ever going to be. Then in the G1, on the second-to-last day, go figure, they have their one-on-one match with a 30-minute time limit, and Omega is able to pull out the win. He goes on to the final of the G1 because he ended up earning the most points. He then lost to Naito. So it was super, super, super important. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, Omega and Naito, if I'm not mistaken, are wrestling each other on day two. So right out of the onset, they're like, you want a big match to start? Here you go.
Oh, snap, folks.
Naito is the eye guy, right? The guy that Jericho just beat? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Why does he open his eye? I don't know. What's the deal?
Okay, do you want the backstory? Do we have time for that?
Should he not open his eyes?
Well, I'll try to okay.
How long is it?
I'll make it as brief as possible. Okay. Naito won the G1. I got to take my glasses off for this. Naito won the G1 climax a number of years ago, so he got the opportunity for the title shot. But there was also a huge match that was booked for Wrestle Kingdom, which was Tanahashi against Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. They gave the fans the opportunity to vote on which match would go on last. They picked the Intercontinental title to main event Wrestle Kingdom. Naito, feeling a little bit neglected, took his title shot, lost, and then said, you know what, screw this, I'm disappearing for a while. What is the background music going on?
I'm giving some feel to the story.
So then he takes off for a while. New Japan's like, we're sending you to Mexico. So he goes to CMLL. There, he hooks up with Los Ingobernables, a faction, by the way, which was led originally by Andrade Cien Almas back when he used to wrestle as La Sombra. He used to wrestle under a mask because Mexico. So he hooked up with them. He joined their heel faction, Los Ingobernables, and he realized while he was down there how he was being treated as a foreigner, and that even in his home promotion of Japan, even though he achieved all his accomplishments and he earned his opportunities, he was being overlooked. Therefore, it opened his eyes. So when he came back, he created the Japanese equivalent of the faction, a group of heels, and started telling the company, screw you, which is why whenever he won a championship, he would throw the belt around and beat the shit out of it because he just didn't care.
That's the hardest word to say. Los Ingobernables.
Los Ingobernables de Japón.
Yeah, that's how I do it. All right, we're going to move on. We got to go.
3!
All right, so based on how they're always putting NXT takeovers in front of the big WWE pay-per-views, that's the basis of this question, and it's from Pete, Petopoulos.
Hey, Pete.
But he's saying, what's our thoughts on an NXT invasion against the main roster after SummerSlam and have an NXT versus Raw SmackDown Survivor Series? And if we have to pick, who's the 5v5?
So do we pick collectively? Do we kind of put together? Should we build a team together? Or?
Yeah, just give your five from, I mean, just... It's like a giant soup bowl of shit. Let's just fucking talk about it.
Hey, Pete's question is not a soup bowl of shit. Relax.
Sorry, not. Petey.
Sorry, Petey. I think that's an excellent question. Actually, we had some really good questions this week. And why not spice up Survivor Series with the NXT versus Raw or SmackDown at Survivor Series? I think that would be awesome. Even an invasion angle would be pretty cool. But yes, I'd be totally down for this. I think it'd be fantastic. Offhand, a lot of cool talent from NXT to pull up. Now, do you keep all faces? Do you have faces and heels? Do you take the best from NXT? So, offhand, I would maybe put Aleister Black, Adam Cole, Velveteen Dream, Gargano, and Ricochet on my team.
That's dirty team. I'm going to chime in here, though, quickly. I think it would be even cooler if instead of it being NXT versus Raw and SmackDown, it's main roster call-ups from NXT that are just not, like, doing what they should be doing. Like, they've already made it to the main roster, and then they kind of stick together on the main roster, and it could even be led by guys like Kevin Owens or some shit like that.
But that was what Nexus was, essentially. Yeah, it's essentially what it was. Yeah.
I missed the whole Nexus thing. So.
Yeah.
Damn, I thought I had a great idea. But...
Well, they did it and it failed. It actually was one of like the worst experiments they did.
No, but I thought Nexus was well received.
I don't know. I mean, some of them went on to do what they did, but I mean, look, Husky Harris, come on.
Okay,
that's Bray Wyatt, by the way.
Yeah.
J-Bob pretending he knows. He's like, oh yeah, that guy.
I know who Husky Harris is.
So this part's really exciting for me because I love playing the devil's advocate. Whose question was this again?
Pete from Pete.
Okay, sorry, Pete. Good question, Pete. I'm not gonna knock on you that, but I'm gonna be perfectly honest, and I feel that this whole invasion concept has been brutally overdone. No thanks in part to 2001, and by that I do not mean the Stanley Kubrick movie, A Space Odyssey. I'm talking about the horrible, 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 horrible times infinity invasion angle we got involving WCW and ECW roster members. And I think that just ruined the whole concept of having an invasion at any point going forward.
15 years from now, wow, that's overkilling it?
I'm still a little mad, yes. Now, the Nexus thing, which was interesting, I enjoyed that at least at the beginning. The problem with that was you had guys that the NXT at the time wasn't even really, there was no performance center. It was just guys doing some stupid type of competition show to get a spot, and everything wasn't really nearly as good as it should have been.
Wasn't it Florida Championship Wrestling was essentially NXT?
Yeah, and they ruined that. They had potential. They had the big angle where they came in and destroyed everybody, but of course when it came time to actually have a competitive match, who won? The main roster guys.
Squash.
So you wasn't it John Cena? Yeah, of course.
Hello.
Now, okay, so if we're going to say, just to go along with the question here and say, okay, let's say you do that. The issue that comes up with, and that's kind of why I kind of like your idea, J-Bomb, in having the guys that were kind of like floundering. It's like, well, we were called up, we came up to all this fanfare, and now we're just kind of here. Sanity's a perfectly good example. They're like, we're coming! And then eventually. The first week on SmackDown, we're having a match. So,
yeah, yep, garbage.
There goes all the surprise. Thanks, guys. So you could do that and have the guys that have kind of come up but haven't really made an impact yet. But if you insist on having call-ups after SummerSlam, first thing you got to do is make sure that all those spots that are going to be left open now have already been filled by guys from the Performance Center and the guys doing the live events. And if you're going to do that, then yeah, it just makes perfect sense to take five guys that are top guys in NXT, or better yet, do a combination of guys and girls and do the first ever mixed tag Survivor Series match.
That could be cool. I like that idea.
Bring in a Nikki Cross or a Bianca Belair or a Shayna Baszler or a Kairi Sane, and you've got something there, and then bring in the guys. Especially if you're going to do that, you have to bring in Ciampa and Gargano if they're not already on the main roster and have them essentially fuck up the match for their own team because they can't get along. You could do the same thing with guys on the main roster because that happens all the time. When it comes to Raw and SmackDown Survivor Series matches, there's always one team that just kind of leads, you know, lets one guy be the lamb being led to slaughter. But if we were to say right here, right now, and we had to pick five, I would say, obviously, Aleister Black is on the list, Ricochet's on the list, Velveteen Dream's on the list, and I'd probably add Ciampa and Gargano to make it an even five. Those are essentially the top five guys on NXT right now. Don't at me, bro. Don't at me.
Hey, man, I think we were on the same page there in our picks outside of Adam Cole for Ciampa, but I'm an Adam Cole guy, baby.
Who isn't an Adam Cole guy? Oh, hold on. J-Ro, are you not an Adam Cole guy?
I used to be an Adam Cole guy.
Oh, God. What, till he came to the E?
Yeah, I think he could be doing more. Okay, here's when I became an Adam Cole guy. There was a just quick aside here. There was a PWG show, and he prepared his own in-ring intro, and he knew that the fans were going to make a joke. So I think it was the fans started chanting, like, Cole sucks dick, and it was part of his intro where the announcer went, "No, I do not suck dick, you fucking queers." And you can tell he was reading it. It was fucking picture perfect, and Cole starts flipping everybody off, and it's like, ridiculous. Anyway, that's Fair when enough. I became a Cole guy.
All right, let's keep the ball rolling here. Four! This one's coming in from Kayfabe Chronicle. And he's saying, with the lackluster tag division and predictable women's division, should WWE split them so that women have their own show, tag teams have their own show? Yeah, and so he thinks it'll give more time for storylines and stuff like that, so he wants just us to discuss it.
So I think That's something that's quite interesting to do for the women, at the very least. I mean, yeah. There's so much women talent. I like watching a women's wrestling match. There was a period after the initial Superstar Shakeup where we had these solid matchups for quite some time. Then it started getting into rush storylines. They would just put somebody in the spotlight. They throw all the other girls in there as their tag team partners to get them all into one segment. You know, then they're adding more people in after WrestleMania. SmackDown's a two-hour show, too, as well. So they don't have a lot of time. We see people popping up in backstage segments, and that's their fill for the week. And they pretty much put them in there just to get them in there for the week. So, yes. And also, you know, we see the evolution of women's wrestling, especially in the WWE. And Triple H now made the announcement of the Mae Young Classic, too. Shawn Michaels said in an interview recently as well that the women aren't far away from their own brand or their own show. So I think it's going to lead in that direction. I think it's going to be good for the women as well, too. I'm looking forward to the stories they can tell and the matchups. You're going to have the best women wrestlers in the world, hopefully. But does that mean now that there's no more women on the main roster? That's the thing. So, it's very possible that they're going to move them over completely, but I don't think they could do the same thing with the tag team division, because you're going to have tag teams on the main show, and you can say, hey, well, no, these aren't tag teams themselves. Those tag teams are reserved for these tag team shows or these tag teams, separate promotions or within the WWE. I don't think it would work as well for the tag team division. I think it's a matter of fixing it, because there's been these flashes where the tag team gets hot again, the division. You know, the Usos, New Day, Cesaro, Sheamus, they really kind of brought the tag team division to life for quite a while, and then now we're seeing it die again. There aren't any real tag teams anymore, and the ones that get called up from NXT are shot dead in the water. So for me, women, I think it's a great idea. I actually think that's the direction they're going to end up going in the near future. And tag team, they just got to fix that shit.
I agree in theory to the concept of having separate shows. The problem that causes is they've forced so much into making titles brand specific that now if you're going to have a women-only show or a tag-only show, you now have the whole Raw SmackDown conundrum. You have two championships.
Yeah, but what a better way to start the promotion by bringing the two titles over and having a tournament where you unify them for the women's championship, like the women's championship.
So you beat me to the thing that I was going to say. Thank you, Des. I think there's certainly no harm in having a unified women's championship or a unified tag championship, and having the champion come in every once in a while if you're going to do that. There is a bit of a pickle, though, if you're going to do a tag-only program, is, I mean, other than the fact that you obviously have to make Teddy Long the general manager, you basically have to now find a way to send all your teams over to one show. If a team forms, how do they form, and then how do they end up on the tag show? And more importantly, if they break up, what do you do after that? It's kind of a bit of a pickle. I think there's no harm in having like a tag show every once in a while. Maybe do like what Impact Wrestling does and do a one night only show where it's all tag matches. That could work. The women's show only, I think, would be a great asset. And considering the success of the Mae Young Classic, I mean, it did well. They're doing another one this year. There's certainly merit to having a women-only show. The problem with all this is you have a cruiserweight show, you got Raw, you got SmackDown, you got NXT, you're going to add more shows to the mix, you got the UK division coming in, and I'm not even counting these guys in that, but as of right now, there are 157 members of the Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and 205 rosters. That doesn't count recruits at the Performance Center. That doesn't count free agents that they signed. That doesn't count John Cena or The Undertaker. And that doesn't count any on-air personnel. I'm talking wrestlers. They have 157 wrestlers.
Jesus.
The goal is to be on a pay-per-view. You just started making the pay-per-views 4 hours. If you're going to add more shows to the mix, how the hell are you going to feature these guys on your pay-per-view shows? It's just not possible. It's just, it's going to have to start being like when UFC does a pay-per-view. Okay, we're going to do the prelims at 2 o'clock. Then we're going to have the other prelims at 4 o'clock. Then we're going to have the pre-show with people talking at 6. And then the pay-per-view at 7 and it goes till 11. That's going to have to be every show at that point because you have so much stuff going on.
Or if they start having a pay-per-view every Sunday.
No.
Like, there's ways to make it work. I think you could do occasional Sundays where we're like, hey, this Sunday we're doing a 205 live show from, you know, a smaller town with like a medium venue where the main event's for the Cruiserweight Championship. Or you do a women's only show where it's not necessarily at Full Sail. I could understand the merit in taping at Full Sail, but do it in, again, somewhere slightly bigger where the focus is for the unified women's championship and have it be a combination of singles and women's tag matches. I mean, there's a talk about having a women's tag title too, isn't there?
Doesn't that come up? Yeah, there has. And I even think there was like a design concept that went out there and they just kind of put a hold on it. I definitely see coming in the near future, especially with tag teams like the Iconics coming to the main roster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The problem that this causes is, yeah, sure, you have more people and now you have roles for them to fill. But if you're worried, Pete, about your story... Sorry, that's not Pete's question. I'm sorry.
No, kayfabe.
Yeah, sorry, Kayfabe Chronicles. My apologies. I was still stuck in my invasion problem.
Poor Pete, you got dragged through the mud today.
Pete, poor Pete. Bruiserweight just couldn't stand a chance. So if you're worried about having these storylines at drag, now you have too much. You have too much content. They're already putting 10 hours of new programming every week, and now you want to add more? I think it's going to cause a decrease in viewership, where they're going to be like, fuck, can I watch something else for once? Fuck, just leave me alone. Like, find a way to make it more salvageable. I don't know.
All right. I'm gonna chime in, too. I see no problem. Like, the way that 205 is handled is 205 has their shows. You see all their talent. Tuesday nights after SmackDown, and then they usually put one match on the pay-per-view. Right now, we're probably getting one match from SmackDown Women's and one match from Raw Women's on the pay-per-views. So if they have their own show, we'll just see more talent on their own show, and then they can just have two matches at the pay-per-view. So I don't agree that the pay-per-views are going to get too long or too big. I think that can work. I get what you mean about there being a bit too much content and you might lose viewers. If they throw it on the network, I mean, me personally, main roster, apart from a few segments, it's usually the women's stuff that I'm more interested in. So for me, I would definitely tune into that. It would be the tag team. No way. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Like you said, if people form, what do? They leave Raw. They go to that show. If they break up, the storylines just won't work, you know? But the women, I could definitely get behind that.
There's always been tag team wrestling, man. You can't take that away. I want to see that. I want to see tag team on the main roster of the shows.
Go six man.
Just gonna fix it.
Six man tag
just,
champs.
Yeah, you're just gonna fix that damn tag team division. Now I want to ask you for the women though, right? So we're saying, hey, they have their own show. They're put into the pay per view, one or two matches on each pay per view. But do they also have their own pay per views? You think that would be worth it, or do you think it just, you know, that really wouldn't draw viewers? To have a whole pay-per-view every month of just women.
I think it should be a network thing and maybe one or two.
Maybe like a women's shows. Like, you know how they do NXT TakeOver? Like once every few months they do like a women's pay-per-view.
Exactly.
And then on the main pay-per-views they might throw one or two matches in.
Yeah, agreed.
Yep.
We all agree. We like the ladies.
I think we're at five, boys.
Five!
This is another one from Pete. So we could keep beating up on him if we want.
No, we'll be nice to him this time.
Well, in that case,
he says,
make it up to you, Pete.
How would you feel if Braun made history by being the first one to run out of time to cash in because Brock is a no-show and refuses to work pay-per-views? Could they work that into a storyline?
So, for hilarity's sake, I think it'd be... I want to see it because it could be funny. But, first of all, Brock's not going to make himself look like a pussy. And at the same time, we're talking about Braun Strowman, man. I think, yes, make this into a storyline and have Braun... Go to Saskatchewan.
Yes.
Yeah. Show up on, like, make it like a farm, right? Just like a plain, flat land farm. He goes out there. He goes to the back barn. You know, Braun's working with the shirt. Brock's working. He's tilling in the yard. He's planting his seeds. He's milking the
Sable's
cows.
There.
And they have like a barn fight. And Braun throws him through the barn. And I don't know. But anyways, it's just, to me, that's the only way you can really make it comedic, I guess, or fun or entertaining. But I don't see it happening. And it would terrify me if they did that because it's Brock. Come on, like he hasn't been a present champion. How could you make it even worse? Like he's hiding somewhere in Saskatchewan.
I mean, Saskatchewan is flat, so he can't be that hard to find. But I actually like that idea when I first heard that Braun was gonna, you know, that Braun won the championship, or really that anybody from Raw won the Money in the Bank briefcase, and it's like, okay, so you cash on him when he shows up, or do you book a flight to Saskatchewan and hope for the best? And I think they could actually turn that into a thing. The problem with that is if you do it for comedic effect, then I don't know if it loses some of its merit. But yeah, there's a part of me that secretly wants to have some kind of weird Discovery Channel type biography show where Braun is dragged a dude unwillingly to film him constantly as he looks through the wilderness for Brock.
With a ref?
He's like, I think I see a bear! You know, and he tears a tree out and he finds I think it's Brock's truck! So naturally he flips that over. You know, that kind of shit. You know, Brock hides in his house and Braun's pounding on the door. I'm not finished with you!
Just, he flips,
you
know, the house.
Like, yeah, he flips the house.
Okay, so we could agree. We would all enjoy it, but...
We would enjoy it, but the problem with that is, in relation to the question, and I'm sorry, Pete.
Yeah, thanks,
Pete. I'm really sorry, Pete. But the whole concept of him running out of time to cash in because Brock doesn't show up is damaging to the Money in the Bank briefcase itself, damaging to Braun, damaging to Brock Lesnar... although he doesn't really care, and no. Damaging to the Fruit Roll-Up Championship. There's no real good that comes out of this other than the whole, well, he couldn't cash in because Brock doesn't show up. That just looks bad. It's bad for wrestling as a whole. It's bad for the WWE. It's just not a good idea.
There's a part of me that really wants to see Brock never lose his title.
Okay.
Just because. If I was Vince, I would do it. Like, I would just be like, you know what? Fuck this shit. Universal title to me is already dead. It died after Kevin Owens lost it. So just never let him lose it. Let him, like, leave WWE with it and then just be forgotten. I'd be so down.
Well, sure, because Kevin Owens had it. Then he gifted it to Goldberg. Goldberg had it, and he gifted it to Lesnar.
Exactly.
And then Lesnar's had it, held it hostage. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be good. I could see it. Okay, question, Pete. Okay.
Six!
Who in the WWE needs a mega push? And this is coming in from Stringing Smile 3. I'll let Dez start this one off.
So, who do I think needs a mega push in the WWE? Well, I mean, who do we hear us talk about on our podcast every week and our frustration and his utilization? So, I think for me, Rusev. I would like to see Rusev get the mega push that he needs.
He's sort of getting it.
No. I mean, this guy has been, I feel like he's been dogtiled for way too long. There's a lot of people you look at. You think they could be pushed a lot more. I don't know. I guess I'm a Rusev guy. I'm excited for him every time he gets the opportunity. And usually when he fights AJ Styles, it's like, hey, you got a title match on SmackDown. He inevitably loses. Now that they're actually seemingly taking a chance with him again, it excites me. So yes, he's getting that push, but I'm just not convinced yet until I kind of see what I guess comes in the following weeks. It could just be he fights AJ next at the pay-per-view and just has a clean loss and we move on from there. I just want to see them do more with him. I think they can. I think he should be reunited with Lana again as well, too. But, you know, that's who I started off with. Talking about Rusev, who I really, really would like to see get the make-a-push would be Drew McIntyre. And people are saying, yeah, he's with, you know, Ziggler and, you know, he's going to be involved in the Intercontinental picture. And I do like what they're doing with Drew McIntyre. But, man, when he was on NXT, he was a beast. His match that he had with Cien Almas was amazing. The fact that he lost a title kind of got stopped dead in his tracks with his momentum. He gets thrown to the main roster. And I'm not saying he's being treated like most NXT talent where they're misusing him. I kind of like where he is. I like the story evolving with Ziggler. But I feel like he should be, he can be a main event player. And I would have liked if Jinder Mahal was the champion and it was Drew McIntyre that came back and took the title off of him and basically challenged him. And it would have been like a 3MB kind of face off. I think the fans would have really enjoyed that as well, too. I think they missed that whole thing because even when Heath Slater fought Drew McIntyre in a tag team match, like they didn't even really play on it. I don't know. That's just me. I really have always liked Drew McIntyre as well, too. So. I would like
we know how
to
much you
him.
Like Drew Mac.
I would like to see a big push for him, but you know.
Okay, as much as I like the work of Diesel 2.0, I think that I don't know. I'm trying to think as to who I would recommend other than Drew because I'm sure he could use it. And I have a feeling it's on its way, but you got to let these things roll. You got to let this whole Ziggler IC title thing turn into whatever it's going to be. So things take time. I was going to say, had it not been for the events of the beginning of the week, that I think Sammy's finally due for his moment in the sun here, but that's fucked. So he's gone until 2019 now. I think Bobby Lashley could probably merit from an actual reasonable match on Raw, or a reasonable program with someone. I think Brian being brought back and then like, well, we're going to have you work with Cass. I think it wasn't a good idea. And obviously, well, look what happened to him. I'm trying to think I don't know if there's anybody that I would really give a mega push to. I think the only guy I think right now, other than Zayn, so that kind of disqualifies him, who's kind of, dare I say, floundering. He's not floundering, but he could be doing more. He could be put in a better position right now, is Finn Balor. That's all I got. But again, like, I'll be honest, I don't watch a whole lot of Raw and SmackDown. I kind of watch bits and pieces, so I catch what I can when I can. But other than that, like, I think everything's just kind of going along the way it's supposed to be going on. I think for the most part, everything's the way it should be. Does that make sense?
Nah, you sexist pigs. Nobody even mentioned a woman.
Sure, Ruby Riott, please.
Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about the female roster at all. That's what I mean. But
Becky Lynch doesn't need a push.
Oh.
Becky Lynch needs a fucking career fix is what she needs. Put her on Raw and have her beat somebody important. Get her off of SmackDown, because it's a bad idea. Have her show up on Raw, have her beat Bliss in a tag match or something with Mickie James, pair Becky up with somebody, have her get the pinfall, and then put her career back on track. Or better yet, send her down to NXT and have her fucking show Shayna Baszler what for.
Give her the Dean Ambrose storyline. The Chase storyline. You know what I mean? Dean Ambrose was not a great champion, but Dean Ambrose was a good, like, journeyman.
Yes.
So let's give Becky Lynch that storyline, and I think it would work for her. And if we're talking about the guys, I'm going to stick with it. I talked about it over the whole lead up to Money in the Bank, and I think Big E, man. Big E can use a huge push. Let's break up the New Day, and let's get him out there, man.
Okay. I really thought you were going to say Bobby Roode.
Fuck Bobby Roode. That guy's banned.
He's banned.
Justin, watch your fucking mouth, eh? Because we'll ban you for talking about
freaking... It's funny, though, when you ask questions about the roster, you got to, like, really quickly try to go through the roster in your head. You try to think of somebody. Later on, you might be like, oh, this guy. But
I Googled you guys were talking.
I think we brought up some good points. I think Balor as well, too. You know, he's somebody who he's doing good, and he's going to get there as well, too. And but, yeah. They just really haven't been, I guess, that's it. They've injected so much talent into the roster. It's really hard for people to kind of get their moment in the sun. But then when you bring up Becky Lynch as well, too, I mean, I can't argue that. That girl definitely does deserves a push and deserves to be put on a proper course for her career.
It just feels like, again, 157 is the magic number. It feels like we're always talking about 30 people, and the rest, to use Jay's favorite word, are fucking fodder. That's what they are. They're fodder.
Justin, you're so going to be banned, bro. Jesus Christ.
I'm two for two in the same question.
Okay, we're moving on. We're moving on. Where are we at here? I got to see here.
Seven.
All right. A quickie here. This is from Brian Waters. How do you feel about Baron Corbin's new haircut?
It's better than his old haircut.
Is it?
Des?
He still looks awful. But yeah, it's so funny because this is what we wanted for years now. It's like, oh my god, come on, man! You have like this stringy noodle hair. You know, you see when he started off in NXT, he had a lot more in the front. His coverage is gone. It's kind of like some kind of like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say Goonies.
He looks like shit.
He looks pretty bad. But I did get used to it. And it's funny, careful what you wish for, right?
Dude, you have graduation goggles on. That's what it was.
Graduation goggles?
Yeah, meaning like you hated school, and then when you know you're going to graduate, all of a sudden everything that you hated becomes not so bad.
Well, I don't know. He had a different look, right, with it. You know, nobody had hair like that. I get it. It looked gross and grimy, but that's kind of what he kind of was. Now he's just another bald guy, and now he's wrestling in a suit. So he looks just like Kane. He looks like corporate Kane, but in shape.
Yeah, but that's – I honestly, what it's done for the storyline for Baron Corbin is amazing. Like, it's not just the haircut. It's just the whole little slight, subtle repackage. Yes, it was a drastic haircut, but they didn't change who
they barely
Corbin
even mentioned
was.
It. Kevin Owens made a comment. I mean, they could have used an angle at least to do it. Have a hair versus hair match with somebody. I know I keep talking about that damn hair versus hair match, but
Mike's getting wet in the pants. Hair versus hair.
I agree that you should have found a way to get some business done, make some money, and do a hair versus hair match. But I honestly think that Baron Corbin has had a hair versus hair match going on for about 2 years now, and his hairbrush has been winning. I feel like every time that dude brushes his hair, it's like, oh, fuck, I'm losing it, and his bathtub drain is clogged. Like, it's just a bad situation. It's just been falling out, and finally they're like, you know what? Dude, you gotta do something with that. Get that fucking hair out of there.
I'm pretty sure they were probably trying to ask him to do this for quite some time. He probably gave in.
No, I'm a badass. I ride my bike. I used to play football. I need my hair. No, you don't.
I'm a lone wolf. All right. Bald wolf. Shit. I'm horrible at keeping track of numbers.
I think.
And I'm also horrible at remembering who asked this question. This was my favorite question, and I don't remember who asked it, so I'm sorry in advance. If you can create a faction with 3 to 5 wrestlers from any promotion today, who do you got?
Okay. Dez, you've kind of had first. I'll take this one. I actually have a nifty idea, and it's not necessarily unconventional, but I like it. We're going to combine wrestlers here.
Oh, God.
I have a... Hold on. I have an idea for a faction involving Becky Lynch, Finn Balor, Killian Dane.
Oh, fuck yeah. I'm on board.
They're going to be managed by Fit Finlay.
Oh, I'm on board.
And they're going to bring in Jordan Devlin from the Indies, and they will be the Fighting Irish.
Holy shit. I think we've talked about that, Dez. Haven't we?
No.
No, we talked about... We talked about something with the accents. No. We did. Or maybe I thought that Finn Balor should be having an affair with Becky Lynch or something along those lines. But
well, what about Kathy Kelly? What's she going to do?
She's not Irish. Fuck her.
Yeah, but she's been getting in on that baby oil and the baby carrots, if you know what I mean. If you follow that dude's Twitter. Oh, my God.
Well, she can just be doing the demon, and Becky can have regular Finn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Fighting Irish. Okay. Mike, who you got?
Fighting Irish.
I don't know. It's hard. You know, factions are kind of something that kind of comes into place organically. And it's funny because we see the tag teams that we have now, and they're tag teams, but we don't get those factions anymore. And what's the last big faction they've had? I know outside the WWE that they exist, but I want to ask you, in the WWE, what was the last big faction that they had?
Nexus, no?
Nexus,
Okay, define big faction.
I guess more than 3 people. I guess at 4. 4 people plus.
Sanity's 4. You got Undisputed Era right now.
Yeah, but do you... Yes, yeah, I do like Undisputed Era. I do like that. That's kind of like when I saw Roderick Strong join, it gave me kind of the anticipation or the excitement that might happen again. They might expand it, maybe new members. That would be awesome. But Sanity, you know, Nikki Cross was there. I liked it, but now she's kind of disappeared. I hear rumors that she's going to... Now that she lost to Shayna Baszler, there's going to be a feud with the Usos, and Naomi's going to get involved somehow, and then I think Nikki Cross is supposed to join at one point, or that's the rumor, so to speak. I hope so. It'd be cool if they grow that faction. The Wyatt family seemed to be close to that as well, too, but it seems like they gave us a taste of it, and then they kind of just don't seize that opportunity, or it dissolves before we get anywhere with it. But, you know, I do miss those big factions, Nation Domination, NWO, DX, even Right to Censor. I mean, they were garbage, but at least you had those surprises of, like, recruiting new members once in a while. You know, we brainwashed this person and we brainwashed that person, and that was kind of cool.
Evolution?
Yeah, for not fair enough, but
Legacy?
They were still
Yeah, but that's
three,
Triple H
three,
just making up stables that he can be in.
Well, it's he wasn't in that one. He wasn't in Legacy, but yeah, okay.
Legacy was just three people, right? So Randy Orton DiBiase and Rhodes.
Trying to think as to what else. But yeah, there have been factions. I don't know. But you didn't directly answer the question.
I would like to see... it could be cool to put Kenny Omega, AJ Styles, if I can put people together from different promotions.
You mean the Bullet Club? Yeah, like really.
I was actually going to say Rollins and then Balor, Bullet Club. But I'd also throw Nakamura in there with them. I think that could
be dope.
Yeah.
That'd be dope, actually.
Yeah. Oh, the five-star squad. There you go.
It's tough, man. It is for sure tough to do this. He did. I can't come up with it, so because I have the questions in front of me, I'm going to cheat on this one. He did say that you can also use past or present wrestlers. So I'm just going to say, like, well, Dez, you mentioned it, having, like, you know, Ken Shamrock.
Oh, yeah, an MMA faction would be pretty cool.
Kind of front, yeah. You know, be the front man of an MMA. I'd like to see Bret Hart or even TJ kind of be involved in some sort of reboot of a Canadian Hart Foundation / something like, you know, along the lines of a Canadian faction. No Bobby Roode, though. Did they?
I forgot about the Next Generation Hart Foundation. They did that.
Yeah, no, I know that one, but it sucked, so...
Imagine if in their prime you had like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock. I'm trying to think of a fifth person here, you know, or like just like all in kind of as a faction. That would be like the most dominant faction there could be, at least.
Oh, that's going to lead into our next one because, oh shit, we're only at 8, eh? No, it's not. That's going to be our final question. So let's go on to 9 then.
9!
If you could choose one NXT alumni on Raw or SmackDown to return to NXT for repackaging, who would it be? What could it add or take away? It's been a hot topic on this guy's timeline, and he's been seeing one name in particular. He didn't mention it, and this is from Undisputed Future Podcast.
Okay. Well, I think the name that they're thinking of is probably John Cena. And I think the only reason why they're thinking of John Cena is because of this whole hype with Velveteen Dream. John Cena does not need repackaging.
No.
I think, could he go down there to give a takeover show some extra viewers from the casual fans? Sure. Fuck, I'd like to see him work Dream. I'd like to see him work Gargano. I'd love to see him work Adam Cole. I'd love to see him work Aleister Black.
Do you want a massage?
Okay.
I'd like to see him work Bella.
Isn't John, he already?
Now? John Cena's not going to NXT, man. His career is winding down.
No, well, but not go to NXT, even.
You pass the torch. You pass the torch.
If he goes
to
NXT, it would be
out
for like one match. He's not going to go for a series of matches.
Okay, then make it count.
Sure.
Have Gargano. Have Ciampa put him out of his misery, and then have him reel. Then you got a guy who's got some fucking heel heat, for sure. Absolutely. But if you're going to send someone down to have repackaged, Kurt Hawkins could probably benefit from that.
Fuck. I like his story. I like his character. He's like pretty good on the mic.
Oh, at Infinity now? Is that what he's up to?
Oh, fuck.
He's at a number now of losses.
When he wins, too, it's going to be by accident. Watch.
Watch him beat Asuka.
Well, everybody can beat Asuka now. Apparently. Got to hit them with a weak-ass super kick.
Salty Dez.
Maybe send James Ellsworth down to NXT?
Hey, that guy's a fucking superstar.
Oh, my God.
Man, send Tyler Breeze down there, man. Guy puts on fucking amazing matches, makes him relevant. He's a big part of NXT. I think he can have some amazing matches on TakeOver.
He wrestled Liger, for fuck's sake. Like, most when people don't realize Liger? That. Jushin Thunder Liger brought over for an NXT TakeOver, and he beat Tyler Breeze in the opening match.
Oh, fuck. Actually,
I
think I watched that.
Just a one-shot deal. And it's good, too. It was...
I'd love to also see, put him down there for good, but send Cesaro back there for now and just have him do some awesome matches. He used to have amazing matches on NXT. I just love to see him. He's got really good chemistry with certain people. He has that kind of, style that kind of translates into NXT, I think. I mean, the guy's kind of can do anything. And I would love to see him back in NXT putting on some amazing matchups. And they used to do that too. They'd take people from the main roster and put them down for a few matches to help the NXT talent. They should still be doing that stuff.
They should.
I think Ty Dillinger could benefit from dropping back down and a little
and
more
every
time
tag
in NXT
team.
Too. Forget the tag teams. Where is AOP, anyways?
I don't know.
I knew it would never work. I knew it wouldn't work.
I don't think that it's not gonna work. It's just
they
like,
gotta be hurt.
It's just
someone's
like with no. I don't think so. I think they realize like, oh, we have 157 people. Fuck. When 3 hours doesn't seem like enough, that's a bad sign.
Their tag team reign is going to be like the Bludgeon Brothers. You know, I know they're not going to be all like, we got hammers and shit, but they're going to be like, we're tough, we smash, we have titles. We have titles for a while. We lose titles, we're gone. You know?
Vince likes big dudes. That's basically it, man. He's got to weird kind of Napoleon complex going on. He really likes big dudes.
I love black guys.
Thank you.
Going back to our question on big pushes, though, now that we're talking about the Bludgeon Brothers, I would love to break up the Bludgeon Brothers and push Luke Harper.
Fair enough. But, okay, so we got Hawkins. I think we're being sexist again. Okay, which female talent would you send down to NXT to be repackaged?
I don't know, man.
Like, repackaged. New
I'd
gimmick,
send Liv Morgan to NXT and just forget about her.
That's not repackaged.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. I think they're all okay, to tell you the truth. I think all their gimmicks are okay. They just don't have any time.
Well, if they're gonna ruin Asuka now, I would have her go back to NXT and resume who she is, but just put on these great. And she can still lose, you know, here and there. But like, the matches she's put on NXT were amazing. And I'm not saying her matches on pay-per-views aren't or won't be amazing either, but I don't really want to like have her. The segments that she's in, she's, you know, backstage. She's, I don't know. It was more exciting, and I enjoyed her more when she was in NXT. Matches that she had, that match with Ember Moon. Oh, just missed that shit.
Okay, but if you want to talk about someone to be repackaged, I think maybe Dana Brooke? We're forgetting about. Thank you. I was just about to say, like, Dana Brooke could definitely use.
I kind of like Worldwide and like the really skanky looking accountant look. I'm down.
Yeah, but she wants to wrestle. Send her down there. Yeah. Let her wrestle.
Eh, I'm okay with her not wrestling, but you know, I get it. Yeah, she could use a repackage, but I think she should come back as like a dirty librarian or something like that.
No. This episode is dirty. Really telling us a lot about J-Bomb as a person.
I think she
clear that internet browser history, buddy.
you don't want to see that shit. All right, no. Before I get myself into more trouble, guys, let's move on to the final topic.
10.
This is a classic question. It's going to be a tough one, and I think it's going to be one we're going to be discussing for a little while. So I want to get everybody's Mount Rushmore of superstars, and we don't have to keep it within the WWE. It's just any wrestler, any era, any time.
Okay, that's interesting. Because to me, Mount Rushmore is like the most recognized, I guess, and impactful in the sport itself.
Okay, let's
but then
say,
again, maybe I'm being a dick by saying that because there's a lot of history outside the WWE that I just don't know about, and maybe these guys did have as big of an impact. I'm thinking more like, I guess, more household names. So,
well, go with yours, Des. Give us
the big four for you. The big four for you for in your life as a wrestling fan. What defines your wrestling fandom?
Oh, as for me, because if I was gonna say of all time in terms of their impact in wrestling, and it's more encompassed of the WWE realm. I'd probably put, you know, Hogan, just because you have to. I don't even like the guy.
Yeah,
100%. I don't think he's the best wrestler, but you have 100% to put him
Hogan
in
has to be in there.
Bruno Sammartino, you know, I really respected this guy, but after watching his ESPN special, like, I just saw how much of an impact he actually did have and how big he was in the industry, so he definitely deserves to be up there. And then you got to put Ric Flair up there as well, too. And the fourth one is a bit tough. Obviously, I want to be biased and say Shawn Michaels, just because people, you know, debate that he could be the greatest of all time in the
it's
modern
Oscar?
Era. Was that?
It's not Asuka?
No, it's not Asuka. No.
Drew Maxey, you could look at him?
No. Drew Maxey, maybe one day. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. The other one, next one's hard. People can say The Rock, but I really don't think so. You know, he did bring a lot into it. He's very entertaining, but I don't know. Stone Cold Steve Austin, huge for the Attitude Era, but his longevity, he wasn't there too long. But then some people can make the argument and say, hey, could be John Cena because he had the longest run, I think, in WWE history, possibly straight run, I'm saying. You know, was it 12 years, 10 to 12 years? And then The Undertaker, he's been around forever. Though I would put Undertaker's gimmick on the gimmicks of Mount Rushmore, if you're going to say, like, the most successful. I don't know if I'd put Undertaker himself up there. So I'm just going to be...
who's your four?
I'm just... hey, look, you let J-Ro talk forever. What, can I not talk forever? Come on.
Yeah! And I tried to interrupt
J-Bomb.
Him, but he just never shut up.
And then, fine, I'll end it with me being Shawn Michaels, because that's my guy, so...
Okay, so who do we got? Who's the four? Michaels?
Michaels, Ric Flair, Sammartino, and Hogan.
Okay, gotcha. You want to go next, Jero?
Actually, I want to hear yours.
All right, cool. Nobody does this. I think Vince McMahon should be on there. I am 100% in agreement. Hogan has to be on there. Stone Cold is on there for me. I'd love to put Bret Hart on there, but I can't. It's a tough call for me between Ric Flair and Randy Savage. I'm going to go with Savage.
Cool. That's so, Savage.
Hogan, Savage, McMahon, and Austin.
Okay. Yeah, I'm actually, you put Vince McMahon, and I was thinking about putting him, so I'm gonna change it up just to keep the original. It's kind of hard, though. Like, if you want to talk about who had the biggest impact on all of the business, I'm trying to think, like, the history of wrestling.
You got to think for you, though. I'm saying for you, man. Like, for you.
I think, okay, my four would be a little odd. My four would probably be Billy Robinson.
Who?
Exactly.
Hold on. I got to Google this.
Okay, I feel like I'm going to have to Google
Robinson
everybody
who's
going to
mention
here.
Billy Robinson is probably the greatest technical wrestler to have ever lived. He's from the United Kingdom originally, and he had a long tenure in, like, the 70s and 80s and shit. He's wrestled, like, all of the names, and he was, like, one of the stiffest, most badass dudes ever.
All right. Okay.
So
everyone's going to Google it.
Giant Baba is on there also. He was the head of All Japan Wrestling for a number of years. So a lot of the big guys that ended up in Japan, Andre the Giant, Stan Hansen, even Hogan. Well, Hogan ended up in New Japan, but like all these guys, Vader, like a lot of that is due to Giant Baba. Although he's kind of oddly shaped as a human being. Third, you have to go Ric Flair. You have to put Ric Flair in there because he did a lot for wrestling in the 80s and he was the biggest draw of his time. And then you kind of have to go with the biggest draw of what we'll consider to be the modern era, and you got to go Stone Cold on that one, like without a doubt.
You don't have Hogan on your Mount Rushmore?
I don't. For you,
like growing up as a kid, like come on, we're all in the same era. There wasn't a draw to wrestling because of Hogan?
Dude, I liked Dynamite Kid when I was a kid, okay? That's really? How different do you want me to be? Like, I like Bret Hart. I like Dynamite Kid. I liked Owen Hart, obviously. I was a tape trader when I was a kid. It was fucking weird. I don't know how I ended up like that, but yeah. I watched shit that nobody watched.
I would have given it to Stone Cold. I would have given it to Stone Cold as well, too. But for me, the thing that kind of eliminated him was just the time that he was there and his run was there, just because he kind of was there for a long period of time, but then kind of just took his ball and left, and really haven't seen much of him since. So I'm trying to think of like legacy, longevity. Not that he wouldn't be a top contender, but putting him before Hogan, I mean, if you were going to ask people, you know, name a wrestler, I'm pretty sure 8 out of 10 people would say Hogan.
Dude.
Yeah.
When this song would hit, we were kids. Like, this is everything, man.
Jay would be hugging his wrestling buddy.
My wrestling buddy was actually Ultimate Warrior. Like, it just reminds me of, like, going to the video store. Like, going to the video store to rent a VHS of, like,
Coliseum Video.
Coliseum Video, man. Like, Survivor Series 94, WrestleMania 8, I think, was the first WrestleMania I watched. I think he fought Psycho Sid there. He was supposed to fight Randy Savage, I think. Or no, he was supposed to fight Flair. Supposed to be Hogan and Flair, and it never ended up happening. But Hogan's on my Mount Rushmore, that's for sure.
Were you aware that Hogan was not the first guy to slam Andre the Giant?
I don't care. Okay. He was the first guy for me to slam Andre the Giant.
See, that's what I... And that's the kind of conversation I have with people on Twitter, where I'm like, you know, Stan Hansen fucking legit picked up Andre and slammed him. People are like, who?
Exactly. Yeah, but who? Who?
Exactly.
Exactly. Who? So it doesn't matter. It's like us with podcasting, right? Nobody knows who we are. They all know who Jericho is, even though we have a way better podcast than Jericho.
I thought you told me we had the greatest podcast and like we were the most popular podcast. Are you saying that you've been lying this whole time?
Oh, no, we're the number one rated one, but, like, I come up with the ratings.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
So who first slammed Andre the Giant? Because I'm reading it's Haku.
Stan Hansen.
I'm reading it's Haku, actually. And then I also see someone saying, hey, look, this is a picture of Harley Race, who was actually the first person to body slam Andre the Giant, and an obscure, rare photo.
Hmm.
Let's do our research. That'd be interesting to find out.
Interesting.
Wasn't it on the Andre the Giant doc? They talked about...
Triple H will say it was him.
Triple H?
He'll be like, I did it. It was me.
Dude, I love fucking Triple H. I don't know where you're... I don't know why you don't like this guy.
I don't mind him. I just like to give him a hard time.
You know what's funny is I remember like 10 years ago, fans were like, fucking Triple H all the fucking time with the title and his fucking Evolution faction. And he's always on top and he's always beating the guys. Now he created NXT and shit. We're like, you know what? Your crimes have been paid for.
Oh, they've been
paid for.
Willing
to forgive you.
That's it too. I just don't like when he kind of like would always kind of put himself into things, and even kind of for a while too when he was semi-retired, or he kind of like put himself into WrestleMania and put him.
But
into
I think Vince did it. You got to think.
Well, when
Vince
he won the
Roy,
when he came in, when he won the Royal Rumble and won the title, like fuck off, man! I was so pissed at that point. Like, dude, you don't need the title. Go to WrestleMania, have your match. You're old now.
But you know what it was for? It was to put over Roman, and Vince has to think that Triple H is a huge draw. He has to think that.
Well, he's got his history. He is a draw. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, whatever, man.
WrestleMania to me without Triple H isn't WrestleMania, and I'm cool with him being injected in WrestleMania.
I don't mind either. I like the match he had this year. I thought that was a perfect place for him to be.
Yeah.
Even a singles match against Rollins, I'm okay with that, you know? But and even kind of when Rollins got his new finisher too, he was like, oh, I know Rollins is going to be big in the future star. Oh, he can't use a curb stomp? I'm going to give him... Use the pedigree. That way he'll always be tied to Seth Rollins. I feel like it's also him putting himself there to be cemented and be remembered through Seth Rollins. So I'm glad he doesn't use the pedigree anymore. Though I'm sure he will eventually... use it again and maybe make part of his moveset later on. He did slay the king, yeah. It's funny, also his ripcord now just gets a 2 count before it would always get a 3 count. It's funny, whenever like finishers transition to signatures, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Just like super how kicks? He never hits the Phoenix Splash.
He always rolls.
Like, he always lands. Yeah, the guy moves, he lands on his feet and he rolls.
Oh, that thingy.
Meanwhile, although I wish he would do his, you know, his old ROH finishers when he was ROH world champion. That the fucking small package driver is fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
And his, the other one he would do, the paroxysm. It's like a reverse brainbuster. You take him from behind and then you spin him up and plop him down. It's fucking nasty ass shit, man. But, you know, WWE, you can't have crazy moves. But Ricochet's allowed to do a 630.
So that's a crazy move. That's nuts. I don't know. That's not going to last long.
Have you ever seen his double moonsault?
What? He does a double backflip?
Yes. Double backflip. And he fucking he lands right on the guy.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna Google some shit.
Double moonsault. It's fucking ridiculous.
Alright, boys, we gotta wrap things up. This is getting long.
Okay.
Alright. So, on behalf of us three, thank you for tuning in to another episode of 10 Count. Follow us on Twitter @_TalkMania. Follow Justin @JustinEstroberge. If he changes his name, well, then we're all fucked. And go to Pro Wrestling. Check us out, prowrestlingtees.com/TalkingMania. I'm J-Bomb. Dez, say ciao.
Have a good reset day, guys. Take care.
J-Ro.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I'm not going to change my name now. Too much pressure.
Sound like the teenager thanks, from The Simpsons.
All right, guys. I'm in Pizza Face Paradise. All right, bye, guys.